I am now Louise. So I hope I do this justice because it's really, really lovely. Okay, so what she says is, when I saw the theme for today, my thoughts were, what can I say about being an astrologer in the world that all these other astrologers might find interesting? I came to the conclusion that all I can share is my own subjective experience. And that's gone through a lot of changes recently, especially in the last 4 years. And I'm very aware that it's just one view and that we all have our unique perspectives, each of which is valuable in themselves. What I want to share today is a personal account of how my own experience has shifted from a fairly left-brained, analytical approach to a more holistic, intuitive one, and that's occurred over the last 4 years or so, and how the process of focusing, which she described later, has catalysed this for me, and how my experience of studying with the faculty has supported and developed that. There is also a question for me around whether this is a shift in how astrologers are approaching our subject generally right now. Is this the time that we are beginning to become more experiential and holistic? And is there a link back to the late 80s and early 90s when I first was enchanted by astrology and with what I'm sensing today? It certainly felt at that time that experiential approaches to astrology were very active. When I first began studying astrology back then, I was in my early 20s and was completely enchanted by it. I was accepting of everything I learned and read and taking courses and devouring books and awed by it all. I wonder if this is how we all are when we first discover astrology. Or could it be a reflection of the Uranus-Neptune conjunction? There was certainly a magical quality about that time. Then as I got older, I became more of a left-brain logical, had more of a left-brain logical and analytical approach, a phase of critical re-examination of what I read, questioning, does this work for me? Coming from the head very much, cerebral, testing it out. I have been training in therapeutic counselling and worked as a hypnotherapist for a number of years. In 2010, I came across an unread book on my shelf called Focusing by Jean Gendlin. It had sat there for 2 years, but it was obviously my time to read it now, and light bulbs went off. I was resonating very strongly to this book. And as a result, I took the certificate in Focusing in 2010, and I'm now taking the practitioner training. As part of the training, I'm doing a practical project on focusing with astrology. It's still ongoing, but there are some findings to share here. In 2010, when I found the book and started my focusing training, my secondary progressed son moved into Cancer in the 12th, and progressed Mercury was building up to the process of stationing retrograde, also in Cancer in the 12th, and trine progressed Neptune. The exact station is next month, in the watery imaginal realm. They're able to gestate, like being in the womb. But putting concepts into precise words seems harder as a result, much more vague and dreamy. It's also, interestingly, my secondary progressed full moon, perhaps reflected in the feeling that this was finally a therapeutic process which really fitted for me, that I'd come home to something. I found focusing, and in the exploration of that process, very soon I started to experience spontaneously what I now call a felt sense of astrology. I'll explain that term, felt sense, in a moment. More right-brained, more holistic. It feels like re-enchantment. The same sense of wonder I had when I first began to study astrology, but in a way that comes from inside rather than outside. It was as though my chart could speak to me now, rather than me imposing my interpretations upon it from outside. Interpretations that perhaps were sometimes tired and overanalyzed, that perhaps made assumptions or were too definite. Can we become too accustomed to a way of seeing and or analyzing our charts? Anyway, wow, such richness and color and so many new insights. And a sense of connection and participation with the symbols I haven't experienced before. Everything felt fresh and new. It reminds me of when I had a Reiki attunement, and it was as though someone had turned up the vividness of all the colours around me. It has also encouraged me to explore a more experiential approach to astrology generally. So, what is focusing? It's a process developed by Gene Gendlin, an American psychotherapist and philosopher. He carried out research over a 15-year period into what worked and what didn't work in psychotherapy, and concluded that it wasn't about the particular therapy technique or the therapist, but about what the client was doing inside themselves that determined whether they experienced successful results from therapy. He developed a 6-step process out of this, outlined in his small book, Focusing, and since then the process has developed and flowered. The particular branch I'm training in is called Inner Relationship Focusing, developed from Gendlin's original ideas by Anne Visor Cornell, but they are still very connected. So, it's a definition of focusing from Anne Visor Cornell. So, in a nutshell, focusing, as developed by Gendlin, is the process of listening to your body in a gentle and accepting way, and hearing the messages your inner self is sending you. This process honours the wisdom and subtle level of knowing that speaks to you through your body. So, Louise continues, when you are focusing, you turn inward, often with closed eyes, although not always. You can do it by yourself or with a partner to reflect back for you. It is often preceded by a body scan, just taking a few moments to notice or sense into different parts of your body, from your feet up to your head, for example, just to settle in and slow yourself down. It's quite meditative, but with more of an intention, and it's actually much easier to practice than it is to describe. You bring your attention to the whole central torso, from throat down to the down to the base of the spine, and allow whatever wants your attention to come to your awareness. Another approach, more relevant to working deliberately with astrology, is to use a symbol or an image or an issue and connecting in with it, bringing your attention to it and forming a felt sense of what comes. So, and I'll just read what she says here. Gendlin gave the name felt sense to the unclear pre-verbal sense of something, the inner knowledge or awareness that has not been consciously thought or verbalized, as that something is experienced in the body. It is not the same as an emotion. This bodily felt something may be an awareness of a situation, or an old hurt, or of something that is coming, perhaps an idea or insight. Crucial to the concept is that it is unclear, it's vague, and it is always more than any attempt to express it verbally. Gendlin also described it as sensing an implicit complexity, a holistic sense of what one is working on. So Louise says, I don't usually like to quote Wikipedia, but this seems to sum up the felt sense very well. You could begin to notice what a felt sense feels like by closing your eyes and bring attention to that inner area and say to yourself, everything in my life is fine. Close your eyes and bring attention to the inner area and then say, everything in my life is fine, is absolutely fine. And her question is, did you get a twinge of something, of some sort, of something subtle, a gut feeling perhaps? And she says, because pretty much everyone has something that they're not happy with in their life. So this statement doesn't generally ring completely true to our body wisdom. So that sense is a felt sense. It may not be clear what it means yet, but you can stay with it and more will come. This idea that there is always more is important here. It stops the process closing down and it stops assumptions being made too soon, like, ah, I know what this is. So then she goes on to talk about coming from presence. So she says that felt sense is approached from a non-judgmental place, a place of openness and gentle curiosity, as you might ideally relate to a friend. And Visor Cornell calls this place presence. So you could acknowledge or say hello to what is there and begin by describing perhaps a word, a colour, a sensation, a thought or an image. Or hear what it says fully. Sometimes it might not want to communicate at all, and that's okay. But to be open to any new feeling, word, sensation, symbol, image, memory, bearing in mind that the felt sense is an ever-changing process, these perceptions need checking back in, and there is always space at the edge for more to come, an openness to be there, to there be more. So Gendlin values that unclear area, that vagueness, where we don't have assumptions and where we are just waiting with openness and keeping company with that unclear something. There's a lot to this approach, more than we have time to go into here, but hopefully this gives you an idea, and I'll give some examples shortly. So a sense that something has changed as a result of the felt sense focusing, which could be something signified by a sigh, or a sense of lightening in some way, or the feeling in the body that can shift and change. This can often be an aha moment, when a particular word really fits, for example. So you might find that one word may not be quite it, so then look for another, or maybe use two words. For example, it might be something like anxiety, but not quite. There's more. The felt sense only seems to lead to a shift like this if it gets that very specific word or description or image. As previously mentioned, an important part of the process can often be to have a companion with you to facilitate and reflect back the words that you use in a helpful way. There isn't time to go into that here, but with a partner there, it can make it a lot easier to keep your attention and not to drift off into reverie or even go to sleep. So this is an image that came to Louise from a focusing session when she was working with Saturn. Evan Munch's The Scream. What came initially was an image rather than a word. Then I checked back in with the felt sense in my body and more came. All our associations are so individual and unique. Your images, words, memories, sensations or stories around Saturn will be completely different to mine, and what comes will invariably surprise you. It will also bring insights and very possibly a shift in your relationship with the archetype. The process, the interaction and the relationship are always changing and keep changing over time. It's very rewarding to watch and track this through regular focusing sessions. And she says with something she's found helpful with this project work is that other experiential methods feed into focusing very well, and focusing can develop and inform those. That having an intention also helps. So collecting associations with particular planets, whether that's images, music, gemstones, objects, and so on. Even making an altar if you want to develop the ritual side. Also drawing the symbols, being slow, deliberate, meditative, either in the chart or separately. And free association with the symbols, then focusing on what comes from this to open it out further. And journaling, keeping a regular record of the process. Also, you could add drawings in there too, colour, and just be creative. Then she adds, many of these ideas came from or were expanded upon by Kat Copps and Richard Swotton in their talks at the AA conference last year, and also to experiential astrology books, in particular those of Babs Kirby, Prudence Jones, and Barbara Schirmer. Sensing into the chart by drawing it, as Kat Copps described in her talk, is a technique I find very helpful. Many of these experiences I'm having are probably common to people who practice experiential astrology regularly in similar ways, but they've been new to me. Sitting back with a large blank piece of paper, A3, and deliberately, slowly, place planets in the circle, perhaps add some colour in there for fire, earth, air and water. However we like, could be drawings associated for people who are more artistic, but just drawing the symbols slowly and deliberately and feeling with the felt sense of drawing each symbol, perhaps making a few notes, stopping, closing the eyes, checking inside. And when you've finished, close your eyes and ask if any particular planet needs to speak, or needs to speak first. See where in the body all of this is felt. She also says that outer events can also feed in when someone's doing inner focusing work. So perhaps the weather outside is blustery, and one of her experiences was that when she was focusing, that created quite a bit of anxiety and provided a sort of thread or a pathway for her to follow. And similarly, when there were people drilling outside, instead of being an interruption, it became sort of part of the process. So, Saturn as an example. So she says, when I first began focusing, I found it hard to even have an awareness of Saturn. I would get a sense of something critical or disapproving or cynical, which located itself outside of my body, above my right shoulder, somewhere generally. Not even communication at first. This shifted into my body over time. I eventually got some sense of being able to say hello, and would get shifting imagery around, and then finally experience a response, a sense of dialogue. I started deliberately focusing with the symbol because she was wondering how it would be to regularly focus on a particular symbol, for example, Saturn's. Does it deepen? Does it change? Does your relationship with it change? Finding out how to be with a symbol, where do I carry it in my body? How do I experience it? Do I recognize it? It's important not just to recall what we've learned about the archetype, but to have a quality of openness, perhaps meditating the symbol, letting go of assumptions so that we can sense freshly into what's there, into what it's saying to us on a personal level. Because, of course, everybody's Saturn is different. And then checking back in, asking the felt sense if it fits before allowing it to open more fully. And she suggests using a combination of open-eyed free association, closing the eyes, checking with the felt sense, so that all those things seem to work well together. Now, she gives an example of her experiences with Saturn in a minute. But first, she says, she explains where her Saturn is. So her Saturn is in Aries in the 10th, conjunct her midheaven, and it's in wide square to Venus in Cancer in the 12th. So this is what she says. A sense of downturned mouth on that bottom part of the curved symbol, the word dur. A grave, the hump of the symbol being a fresh mound with a cross on it. Mental processes narrating in the background as well. Yes, Saturn is about death, the end of things, father time. Then moving deliberately back to the unclear sense. What is fresh? What isn't known yet? It becomes more personal gradually. Something about the curved shape on the symbol, the word chore, needing to climb the slope, the hard work in that, needing to take time, checking all this back in. Then the sense of goal, the cross on top of the symbol, becoming X marks the spot. An image from an old black and white Western, the lonely grave on the top of the hill, doesn't have a name on it. There's something more here about being remembered and not forgotten. Sense of sadness and loneliness, but that's not the right wording. Desolate fits and gives a sense of shift. Other words resonate also. Melancholy, toil, worked to death. A film, Once Upon a Time in the West. Shivered men who don't have any emotion. They're still, like they're made of stone. They don't speak. A line from a David Bowie song. And the clock waits so patiently on your song. A sense of my head pulling down. Tiredness, pointless, all the fighting, too tired, bleak. It wants me to do things, but at the same time it stops me. It pulls on my legs, pulls my head under the covers. There's a paradox here. It pushes and pulls at the same time. Sensing how it is to be with that. And another quote, you're a rock and roll suicide, it berates. The something that berates sits with its back to me, hunched like the hunch on the symbol. It carries a heavy burden, is very still. Has large hands, they can hold a lot. Something else in me also feels like a naughty schoolgirl in his presence. Acknowledging that part also. The word gnarly, gnarled, he is gnarled, like Hugh, large hands, really strong, really capable. Sense of strength really felt there, grave. The word gravitas, bearded like the artisan image. Sense that he's seen everything, so much time, so much experience. So solar plexus feels much calmer now. There has been a shift. The next image, Michelangelo's David, a black and white high resolution photograph. I saw of the detail of the hand, the massive stone hand. Words and insights around that. Then a photograph I had seen of an old man's hand, very big, gnarled, again in black and white, but holding a small bird in the open but gently cupped palm. There can be both. Strength, resilience, but also compassion can exist alongside this. So she continues, working with Saturn like this has been deeply enriching and difficult at times. It can be hard sometimes to be able to be with the archetype from a place of presence without being overwhelmed or identified with it. And this can be the case with other planets too, of course. Bringing it back to personal meaning, what has this been about for me? What is fresh and what is new that was previously unclear? For example, an insight that when the words then like bleak and melancholy came, these had a personal resonance. And how was it to be with that? Sensations of hopelessness, of hitting rock bottom, and of finally accepting that, of being resigned to something. But also something else that says if you can't feel that rock bottom place, there is no sense, that's no sense of hope, that sense of no hope. It says cheer up, and it's not okay with other people if you're like this. There was a sense of something very bare-boned here, and an importance to really getting to the bottom of something. A question that created a shift for me was, how do you know where your foundations are otherwise? How do you know how strong you can be? How do you know how much you can endure? How much you are capable of? And she has a little note here. I experienced a transit of Pluto square Saturn recently. So, putting flesh on the bones of what all this is about for you on a personal level, and getting a felt sense of what that is in yourself. You can then identify with that place in you and notice the changing relationship. It's an archetype, but you can resonate with this and relate to it on a personal level. And the planets are not in a void. They are in a sign, a house, they're in aspect. So there is a complex associated with that. As I work with Saturn, I frequently saw the square to Venus in my Cancer popping up, for example. So now she gives a Venus example. So some images that came from Venus in the focusing session, just in contrast, were fuzziness around the edges. Interesting, she notes, given that it's in her 12th house, natally hidden away. So, the images. A circle with a cross underneath. Also symbol for ankh is here too. Sense of the difference, the shape of the two. Ankh is not round at the top. Something about intensity of focus in that shape, which is like a candle flame, and an odd association with doing a yoga session, an inverted pose, looking at the gap between my legs, and the outline looking like a candle flame, a still candle flame. Something about that still fire in my body, I have a sense of energy is too vague. It's something to do with focus and intensity together. I'm very aware of where I'm sitting. My pelvic area, almost squatting in a sense, even though she was literally sitting in a chair. And then images of Venus figurines, pear-shaped statues, fertility, the grounded process of being, something there about creation and a line from a Kate Bush song. There's room for the life in your womb, and inside of you can be too. There's room for a life in your womb, woman. Upbeat. Real sense of celebration about it as well. I can hear it in my head, see her doing this, dancing in my seat, smiling. Now, some strange thing about being symmetrical as well, something about a line being drawn down the middle and being the same on both sides. Question mark. The symmetrical thing, I don't know what that's about, but it feels like I'm sitting in quite a symmetrical way. I'm just, oh, centered, yeah. So there's something about the area here is centre, which I wouldn't normally say. My centre feels much lower, hips, bottom area. Doesn't really touch ground, but something about ground, earth. Then. Now, a little kind of nose wrinkly thing going on, almost as though she's winking at me. A sense of someone saying, yep, I haven't seen you for a while. A kind of familiarity of not having been there for a while. I'm just thanking that. I've missed you. Feels like a place so close. And then she notes, Venus in Cancer, 12th house, mutual reception with Moon in Taurus, and Sun and Mercury also in Taurus. And then she adds, it's a shame we can't share the actual music because music comes to her a lot. So, her conclusions and some extra comments. So what she's saying is, could our astrological clients work in this way without the depth of astrological knowledge? I'm hoping to explore this more fully. Prudence Jones talks in Creative Astrology about whether the client needs the astrologer to interpret for them, or if it is possible to facilitate them to unfold and explore this for themselves. And there's a quote here from Prudence Jones. To be sure, both skill and experience need talent and effort to develop. But since astrologers must assume that some part of every person is in tune with astrological cycles, then an intuitive ability to interpret its signals for oneself would seem to lie dormant in us all. So Louise says, in astrology we are familiar with the idea that there are many voices within us. We see the players on the stage, the planets in our charts, and recognise their sometimes harmonious but often contradictory relationships. These archetypes communicate, and we can arrange them in front of us to see if we can, respectfully, have a conversation. Or perhaps more importantly, simply be with them. To more clearly observe our relationship with them and their relationships with each other. These different parts of ourselves. That word parts doesn't quite fit because it seems to imply something static when in fact it's more like a process, an interaction, which is always shifting and changing, a relationship. Our chart speaks to us, and that is just awe-inspiring in itself. Focusing offers a process to facilitate that, a useful tool we can add to the experiential toolbox. We can locate ourselves somehow through that interaction, not in order to change, but in order to be more fully accept. And by holding that space and that quality of non-judgmental acceptance, which isn't always easy, it seems awareness can develop and change and healing can often come. Here from Bill Harris, which says, let whatever happens be okay. So then she asks, what can focusing contribute to astrology? Focusing offers a process to experience astrology from the inside, a quality of non-judgmental openness to communicating with the astrological archetypes without prior assumptions. It stresses the importance of sensing freshly into these spaces each time with acceptance and curiosity. And it guides us to come from a place of presence so that we can gently find the right distance in order to form a relationship. Not too close that we are identified, but not so far that we are disassociated. We spend much of our time in the fast-paced world out there, and as Carl Jung said, when an inner situation is not made conscious, it appears outside as fate. So it makes sense to slow down and find ways to regularly move inside, to shift our awareness with whatever methods best suit us. That could be through focusing, but of course there are many other valuable routes. And she's got a lovely Rumi poem here, which I'm going to let you read. Okay, and one more quote. So she's left the latter word to Carl Jung, who looks outside dreams, who looks inside ways.